is going on, everybody? Welcome to our downtown studios. I am John Ramsey, and he is Robin Black, and this is Five Rounds Today. The UFC action continues as the Fight Night show is set to go down, Fight Night 94. I know they don't like calling it numbers, but it's Dustin Poirier versus Michael Johnson, a pivotal 155-pound matchup going down at the State Farm Arena in Hidalgo, Texas, this Saturday night. And man, oh man, when you think about what we're going to see from that main event, Dustin Poirier just seems to be, especially after the Conor fight, just very, very mentally strong, very in tune with him. But Michael Johnson, he can beat you. This guy, he's an athlete. He works with some of the best coaches and team members in the game. When you picture how this fight is going to go, is Dustin Poirier landing a lot of leg kicks to affect the mobility of Michael Johnson?
Johnson's got some mean-ass kicks too, man. Yeah. Like some mean kicks. It's really cool, and it's not one I kind of pictured when I was picturing these guys kind of moving up. So they're both southpaws. They both strike extraordinarily well. They're both going to be very, very hard to take down, even harder to hold down. And I know Poirier against Duffy had some great stuff,
success, yeah.
Great success there. But this is different.
But he's got a really good I think one of the things people forget about Dustin Poirier is how good his ground game is.
When he's on top, you're in trouble. I just don't – that'll be a goal, and it'll be a goal to try to get MJ to engage him defensively when he tries to do that. You know, to get his arms underneath him, lower his level, whatever. If he can get those responses from him, he can try to tax those responses, penalize him for those responses. As far as just engaging and wrestling against him to put him on his back, I don't know that anyone does that to any of those guys from that Black Stallion. But not too often.
What's interesting is something you brought up a while back, and it's kind of stuck in my head. It was you were talking to Luke Rockhold, and he was talking about the Lyoto Machida fight, and he said, "Yeah, of course, I believe I have better jiu-jitsu skills. I believe I have better ground skills, but it's not going to be about wrestling. I'm going to punch him in his face, and when he falls to the ground, that's when I'm going to employ my ground tactics." And you could see, based on what we've seen of Dustin Poirier, that's the game. It's like, well, this is where I want it.
Exactly.
But if you are up for the challenge and you start scoring on me, I'm going to find openings, knock you down to the ground, and then go to work there.
Yeah, bingo. That's both of these guys. If and when the ground engagement happens, it's through a knockdown, a stumble from something, a caught kick. Mm-hmm. But initiating an attack to take the other guy down these days, the penalty for it is so high now. I shoot in traditionally on you, and you drive now where your sternum is on the back of my head and my face is now on the ground. And you go to a front headlock position. You take somebody like Tony Ferguson. Soon as you're there, there's a whole world from there. Your wrist, you're like, well, I better put Tony on the ground. To do that, I must do this. When I do this, he slaps my head down. And he's slapped down front headlock city. And all of these guys are getting good at that now. Dustin's at ATT, right?
Yeah.
You know, Mike Brown and that wrestling room down there, there's no position that you're not in danger. If you do something and he stops you, he now has a dominant position. It used to be, I'll try to take you down. Well, I didn't get you down. No big deal. Now, I try to take you down. In that attempt, you turn it and you squash me in a position that you have the advantage. So it isn't just try, fail. It's try to get a better position and end up in a worse position. So I think we are seeing now against the fence, it's different. We go into the fence and we take one of our home base positions and we start working trips and laces and different things there. It's less risky. But any kind of out open field takedowns now, it isn't yes or no. It's yes or really, really bad no. So I think if either of both of these guys will stand, try to hurt the other one, if they're both maybe going to kick, I'd expect Johnson to do a lot of kicking. His left kick is brutal.
Yeah.
And it's strange. I really like watching him fight because on first glance, it may look like he's not like technically correct.
It's true. It looks like he
very
does.
Much
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
He just expresses it kind of violently and expresses it with a little bit of a ferocity to it that takes away kind of that smooth nature that some fighters have. He's super technical. And it just looks different, and it's cool. He'll be doing a lot of kicking. But if that's the case, with kind of thinking it out loud now, and Poirier and Mike and those that team there, let's be catching some of these kicks. Let's be catching kicks, taking them down. That's a good way to end up on top. We didn't have to put ourselves in jeopardy of our face being squashed to the mat. We caught something and took them down.
My question, one of the things I want to ask you, you and I are old school fight fans. We've been watching and covering this for a long, long time. You look at a guy like Randy Couture. We all recognize that he's a talented strategist. He's faced some of the best fighters in the world, but he has a slew of losses. Mm-hmm. Nick and Nathan Diaz, because they came from that era, Chael Sonnen, a lot of those fighters have a boatload of losses. But if you look at the new wave guys, a guy like Dustin Poirier, 20 wins, only 4 losses. Mm-hmm. Michael Johnson, 16 wins, 10 losses. Now, when I consider Michael Johnson part of the new wave. Now, this is no disrespect to Michael Johnson, but has he got comfortable losing? Because, you know, you look at the fight with Beneil Dariush, for example, where
we thought he won that
fight. I thought he won that fight. I think most people won that fight. But is there another gear where it's like, well, this is as far as I can take it? Or is Michael Johnson the type of guy that makes sure, no matter what, in his mind, I have won every single round?
Think he thought he won that one, and he believed it. That's why he was so outraged after. And against Diaz, he admitted his faults in it, allowing this guy to affect him mentally. So it's something we've been talking about during the week. You talked about how Poirier turned the corner after the Conor. This is a corner turner for him, too. The reason Poirier turned the corner after the McGregor fight is he realized the power of the mind, not only like Conor uses it offensively, but the power of your mind to deal with that. He's changed, and I think Mike will have too. So we get to talk to coaches and teammates and stuff. We always kind of have, and sometimes they become friends or they start to trust us, and that's really cool. But even when they do that, part of their job is to protect information sometimes. So I will try to just gather things. Like, say, Evan Boris trains with Michael Johnson. He is a close friend. He was in my wedding party. Yep. He's a very close friend. And he but he will not give away any secrets of the people he trains, even to a friend, because that's his responsibility. So I'll pick up details from the tone of his voice and stuff. And when he talks about Michael Johnson, you hear like admiration in his voice. Mm-hmm. You hear him talk about how driven and hardworking this guy, and focused and ferocious. And you know, he won't say, and also he's also not going to say, well, you know, I train these guys and this guy works hard and this guy doesn't. Yeah. He's not going to tell me any of that. Right. And when coaches do say that, often to some nameless microphone that's held in front of their face, they're saying something to shape the audience's opinion or to shape the opponent's opinion or to boost their fighter. But if you know somebody well enough, they're out of war. You know somebody well enough over time, their voice itself starts to give things away. And his coaches have absolute confidence in him. And that's not, like I said, it's not the confidence you say in front of 17 cameras. It's the confidence that you just is given away when having a conversation. They believe in this guy and his work ethic and his drive and that he can beat anybody. And the Diaz fight is a turning point for sure, which is what's so interesting about this fight for the two of them. They come in here. One has already taken that turn, and the other one now gets the chance.
I like that you're bringing that up, because when you look at 155 pounds, and we've been having this conversation over the last week because of what transpired at UFC 203 and the fact that CM Punk made it such a ridiculous amount of money, the question that I have to ask is clearly, both of these guys want to fight for a UFC championship. They want to become a UFC champion. Does that mean you take a conservative approach? Because, okay, this is must win because I'm not right now ranked in the top 10. If I want to get a big fight, I have to play the smart game and ensure the victory. I mean, that doesn't seem like Dustin Poirier's M.O. He's a guy that...
Although the Duffy fight was different than his old M.O.
Sure, sure.
But he said to me when you and... was it you and I or me and Pollock that were in Quebec City?
You and Pollock, yeah.
And after... Remember he had that fight with... It wasn't Cisco Rivera. It was...
Khorasani.
Khorasani, yes. And I said to him, he stood in there and they're like pounding, he's wobbling, and he just went for it, he willed himself to win. That's who he was for sure. Yeah. That was him. That's how he fought. And I asked him after, I said, I say, hey, can I ask you a question? He goes, yeah, of course. And I said, you know, you could have moved your feet, jabbed that guy's face off, got on top.
Because you know he has the skills to do that.
And he said it. He goes, absolutely. He goes, and you know, I even came in here thinking I'll do jab, you know, like jab city all over. And you know, he's very bombastic, kind of guy. And I just jab his face, I'd get on top. I could like out jujitsu him. But bro, this is I'm here to fight like this. This is me. This is what I do. And he's just, well, he didn't even have a camera or a microphone. He's just getting all kind of worked up. Now, after you win a fight, you feel a lot of things. But, and that was who he really was. And then along the way, he had a fight in Ireland and his opponent pulled
Joe
out.
Joe Duffy, I was forced to pull out.
Duffy
of the fight.
Was out and they offered him that other guy from Northern Ireland. Yeah. And he said no. And
Norman Park.
Yeah. And we're like, that's weird. And he was, I'll fight anybody, anytime, anywhere. That was one turning point for him, too.
Now, is that management in his ear? Is that his teammates saying, look
at me? No manager can tell a guy hell driven to go fight a guy anyways. They just you can't convince him.
But if
he had to decide that. Regardless of who advised him, he decided it was right, and he talked about it openly.
Sure.
He did interviews. He did say, some people gave me this advice. But he also said, but it's my decision, and I decided this. And it was right. Look how good he looked against Duffy.
Yeah,
he had a game plan for this guy. He was prepared for this guy. He was a new wrinkle to his personality. And that still is part of that turning point ever since his last loss. Was Conor his last loss? I believe so. Yeah.
I believe it was.
Yeah. And then so it's a loss, understanding of those things, rebounding, moving up in weight, making different approaches, having a more strategic approach. That's the long game.
And I agree. Yeah. One of the things I think it's difficult for fans, myself included, is that when you see a fighter for so many years, I mean, we called his fights in Quebec in 2010. Mm-hmm. And even when he fought in the WEC and into the UFC, you saw the same guy. Mm-hmm. You saw everything he was doing. And then you see something like that. It's like, okay, if he's able to change that, what else is he able to change? And how good is he going to get in the future? We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're talking about the co-main event of UFC Fight Night, Johnson versus Poirier. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you talking about UFC Fight Night going down in Texas on Saturday night. Michael Johnson taking on Dustin Poirier in the lightweight main event, the co-featured bout, a very important fight at 185 pounds. The athlete out of Greg Jackson, Mike Winklejohn's camp, Derek Brunson taking on the spectacular Uriah Hall. And I'm not going to simplify this, but when we look at it on paper, Derek Brunson has a wrestling background. Of course, he trains in every area. Uriah Hall with that spectacular traditional martial arts background. I think it's Kyokushin Karate and Taekwondo as well.
Yeah.
And you see how he blends them together. When you think about this, especially because, in my opinion, Derek Brunson's probably one of the best athletes, if not the best athlete, that Uriah Hall has faced. What are your keys to victory?
So if Brunson is the best athlete he's faced, in theory, the martial arts was designed to take the person potentially less strong or less athletic and win with technique and skills. Now, in theory,
but when you add a sensei to that.
Yeah, well, in theory, like, you know, the original thinking was you're big and strong and you don't know the martial arts. And I do know the martial arts. I should be able to use that against you. There are degrees of that. You're big and strong and very skilled. And I'm slightly less big and strong but more skilled. Those theories should still apply.
Right.
And if you ask many coaches, you ask Matt Hume, Firas Sahabi, a number of the guys who are like skill development.
Kills all.
Yeah, kills all. So the more skilled guy should, if he, between expressing properly in the moment and proper preparation and research and study and understanding and strategy, this better skilled guy should be able to find a way to win. But that is so theoretical, right? Like, that is so theoretical because that is probably true, but Overeem is more skilled than Stipe, arguably.
Sure, sure.
Like pure skill. Just the martial arts ability.
Okay.
50 fights, kickboxing for 20 years, straight up martial arts skill. Stipe won the fight.
Now, can you apply the word skill to dealing with the chaos of the cage? Is that skill development that, you know what, I understand how to manage pressure and I understand how to manage the crowd and deal with everything that my body is doing? Is that skill development?
Faraz would say yes, and I think Matt Hume would say yes, and I think Greg Jackson would say yes. We are starting now, so to study something is to go in and gather information. So we gather information. When the hand does this, this does this, you slip this way, the body works this way. We start to understand everything, all of these outside steps, and then you're left with more questions. Well, okay, well, that happens. Soon as you know enough of the physical, you start asking questions about the mental, because it's real. Perception, right? And one of these things would be, does Demetrius Johnson, for example, I'm winding off from this concept, does he see things at a different speed than some other
fighters?
Because
it feels like it's the Matrix.
Maybe he does. But how the f*** do we measure that? Right? We study it. Also, he can't tell us because he can't compare his perception and his reaction time and stuff to himself 8 years ago because he's only him now. And he has no memory of exactly the way he saw it. He knows he's a better fighter. But these are the things we start to look at as being attributes. We are now maybe years away from examining them. We're only far enough along our study to look and go, some of these attributes are real and need to be studied. But we don't have the science. Maybe that's the next step for that UFC training facility and maybe bring ideas up. Maybe there's no way to research them yet, and there is in a few years. But perception, speed at which you see it. Wayne Gretzky used to say that he – and everybody said about him, he just sees the game.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean though? We know kind of what it means. He'd be skating along and he'd go behind his back and he'd be right on this guy's stick. That's something. That's a thing. We have words that we've decided when we say it, we can imagine what it means. Oh, he sees the ice better. What's really happening? Is it reaction speed? Is it the perception at which his brain reads information?
Training.
Does training feed those things and improve those things? These are all the questions that if you really keep becoming curious, these are the next questions. And we don't have answers. And if some, you know, you could make up answers. Well, I'm an MMA analyst. It must be this. You don't want to do that. You want to take these interesting questions and find ways to study them. Ask the greats. Next time we see Matt Hume, this is going to be one of the questions that we'll ask him.
Well, because when I look at Uriah Hall and when I've listened to his interviews and I've talked to him in the past, you're dealing with an intelligent guy, an intelligent combat sports athlete who's been doing the fight game for a long time. And it feels like when he's inside of the cage, he has more options than his opponent, that he has stuff that his opponent has never even seen before. But I look at Derek Brunson. This guy's a winner. This is an athlete that he's a doer. I listen to Greg. I listen to Mike. And I go out and do it. I don't overthink
this
stuff.
They say do 1,000 kicks. I do 1,500.
That type of thing. And what is the formula? Because as you can see, if you're a thinker, sometimes you can overthink things.
Yes, sure. For sure. And we were talking about Uriah Hall. And we might be able to get him on the show. Let's try to get him on the phone. You never know.
Thanks so much for giving us the time. Of course, Uriah Hall taking on Derek Brunson this Saturday in Texas. And Uriah, we're having just a little bit of a discussion about this co-main event. And we look at some of your past opponents, and we look at Derek Brunson. He seems to be one of the better athletes that you faced throughout your career. Do you like new challenges? Do you like athletes that push you to be a better martial artist?
Absolutely. I don't see really much of a threat. He's one-dimensional. He has a wrestling base. He has some power in his hands, and it's just being in the wrong place at the wrong time for most of his opponent. But I'm a very dynamic striker. I'm a lot faster, and I only need a small opening.
Uriah, when at this stage of your life, you're a lifelong martial artist with incredible supple skills and the way that you move is incredibly smooth. Is it challenging for you now? Like, do you plateau as somebody who has reached this high level of skill? Do you plateau a little bit and then make improvements in bursts and then plateau again? Or what is your skill development like at this stage?
You always plateau, but you're never going to stay there. So it's a learning experience, a growing experience. It's just letting the media, the critics, and everyone else get in the way. But when you remember yourself and where you get at, you get back on track.
And, you know, we're not – we work in the media, but we analyze fights. We're not fans of the average mixed martial arts media. And when you look at – is it frustrating as a high-level martial artist to see that the audience has a lower-level understanding of where the martial arts are at, and the people who report on it, report on Twitter beefs and CM Punk and all this f***ing nonsense, and they don't educate the audience on the beauty of the martial arts? Is that frustrating?
Actually, it's not frustrating. It's actually disgusting. It's something I don't like to see at all, but it is what it is. It's a part of the world, it's a part of the game, and most of the time you can't change the world, so you just got to change yourself.
Now, Uriah, we've talked to you in the past, and we've seen the post-fight interviews, and we've seen some of the things you posted online. A very intelligent guy with clearly a high fight IQ. Is it difficult inside of the cage to not overthink things?
But that's what makes it so exciting. You don't know what can happen. It's a human chess match. Sometimes you get caught with a move. Sometimes you just get caught at your element, and it's like, all right, what happened? You know, you gotta freak out. But it goes back to your training. When you put yourself outside your comfort zone, when you're training those attributes that bothers you, it's like wrestling. If you push yourself in that line of work for so long, if you don't understand it, to get comfortable when you go up against a wrestler, you've been there before. It's just how you really train.
Well, you've talked about your admiration for Anderson Silva, and we've had the chance to talk to numerous fighters who say one of the reasons why they love Anderson Silva is because of his ability to be comfortable inside of the cage. Do you find yourself getting comfortable inside of the cage, and is it easy for you to get to that point?
It's never easy, but it's a learning experience. But what I'm learning is to focus more on my type of fight, you know, because most of the time you get in there, you let the other person dictate the pace, and it takes you out of your element. Now you just find the survive, then going out there and just fighting your fight. It's just a matter of balance. Some days you show up, some days you don't. But again, you just got to train yourself to be in that mindset most of the time.
Uriah, there have been times when you fought that you've been just so incredibly free to express yourself, to express the martial arts in combat in real time. Can you tell us what that feels like when you access that area and you're able to truly be free as an artist in there? What does that feel like?
To be honest, it's just me blanking out and not thinking too much. For the times that I've lost my fights, it's always overwhelming and overthinking and the negative affirmation and the people. But for the time that I've done well, it's just blanking out. I'm usually very, very creative when I'm blanked out. And that was part of the goal, just to be freely and calm. It's like, you know, people saying bad stuff to you and it doesn't really get to you. When I'm at that level, I could do spectacular things. I'm just learning how to control it.
Have you? What have you done to work on mental strength? Over the last number of years, we've seen that people put a lot of emphasis in trying to develop their mentality going into the cage. Are you just a mentally strong guy, or is it something that you need to work on a daily basis?
It's a daily basis, but what I've been doing is getting out of my own head. When you get out of your own head, you get out of your own way. Mm-hmm. When you're out of your way, I mean, you can just go forward.
How do you get out of your own way? How do you, you know, how do you not buy into the hype? How do you not, when you look at some of your highlights, like, geez, I am the man. How do you make sure you reel that in to focus on what's important, and that is the future?
You basically just said it.
it's one of those things. If I say to you, don't look at your shoelaces, you look at your shoelaces. It's human nature. Don't, you know, get out of your own way is a challenge. Do you meditate? Is that something you do too?
I don't think that's a form of meditation that you can do. I mean, what is meditation? People think meditation is just to sit there and hum. But meditation is like a practice, a life skill. If you tell me not to look at my shoelaces, yeah, instinctively it's like saying, well, why not? Why should I not? But if I know my shoelaces is fine because I tied it, and you say don't look at your shoelaces, and I'm like, all right, cool, I'm good. Mm-hmm. So it's just that confidence and knowing what you possess and knowing what you do and what you're capable of to remind yourself of the confidence that you have. And, you know, sometimes you lose track of it. So you have to, it's a daily life, man. It's like a fight. You fight yourself to wake up. You fight yourself to eat right. You fight yourself to put your clothes on sometimes. Some days you don't want to do shit, but you got to remind yourself why. You got to remind yourself of your why, you know, to further go ahead.
Do you, we know that you've spent time traveling around to sharpen your skills. Where do you call home now? And do you feel that it's important to have a specific team around you to make you better?
It's absolutely important and necessary to have a specific team, roughly people that are the positive influence. I'm in Las Vegas right now. I moved from California for a bunch of reasons. One, to stay close to my coach because he's like 10, 15 minutes from my house. I needed to be in that positive reinforcement, that positive environment, that grind that got me to where I was. I've lost track of that. I've been distracted. But if I'm around, you know, my coach, who's always positive, who's always confident, then I'm easily reminded to be there, to train more, to not let myself get distracted because I travel so much. And I was living in California. I was training out there, but my main coach is in Vegas, and I would finish out my camp there. So I decided to just completely step out of my comfort zone again and just go in a place where I definitely save money because it's cheaper over there. But at the same time, just to be in the fight capital where it's just easy to focus on it. I have a small window.
You're right. It's really awesome to watch you work in the cage and to watch you express your martial arts. But it's also really cool to watch you on a journey of improvement. We're really enjoying it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Uriah Hall takes on Derek Brunson this Saturday night in Hidalgo, Texas. Uriah, thank you so much for the time. We'll be tuning in.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We're talking more about UFC Fight Night Johnson versus Poirier when we come back to Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. And man, oh man, when you just think about the mixed martial arts calendar, and more specifically the UFC's calendar, you know, you get through a show and the next week there's another big show and big fights. And we were talking off the top about this main event between Dustin Poirier and Michael Johnson. But when you look at this card, sometimes you just forget some of the guys that are on their roster and some of the interesting fights, like this fight with Evan Dunham. His opponent pulls out of his fight, and they have to find somebody. And this is a guy, his opponent. You and I have had a chance to call a couple of his fights.
Yeah, I've called three of them, I think.
Rick Glenn, a World Series of Fighting and Score Fighting Series veteran, 18-3-1. How does a fighter get to be 18-3-1, spent time training with the Rufus Sport team out in Wisconsin? How does a guy get a record like that and the way he's winning fights and not – how is he not already in the UFC?
Well, a lot of these guys on the way – like Rick's a fighter. Like,
yeah.
That's what he is.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he does. His wife is supportive of it. He travels and he fights. Like a lot of these guys, that is fundamentally who they are. So you're there, you know, whatever manager or agent or whatever you got kicking around, doing his best for you. It's like, well, you know, Rick, you know, like, UFC won't return my calls. But these guys over here at Ryzen, in his case, yeah, World Series of Fighting, whatever, they've offered us this. If you're Rick Glenn, you're like, I just want to fight, man.
Yeah.
I just want to fight. So you sign that deal, which may be three or four or five fights. Sometimes if they give you a shot at one of their belts, it's longer. So all the next thing you know, you're fight number 14, 15, 16. And for a guy like this, really, he just wants to fight.
Yeah, that's what it seems. Based on what we've seen of him, he just seems like this is where he is meant to be.
Yeah. And but even those guys, eventually they're like, but wait. And he's fought good guys.
Yeah.
He's fought tough fights. But even then, you're like, I want to fight the best guys in the world now. And, you know, he wanted to go to the UFC way long ago. And you hear things and whatever. But now it's like, I got to fight the best guys. Michael Chandler over in Bellator, he seems happy there. They pay him well. He gets to put on great performances. But you got to think he wants to fight the biggest list of the best guys. So Rick Glenn, they're like, hey, we got a Evan Dunham at 155 pounds on like 8 days notice. Like, sign me up. Yeah,
because he was 45, right?
Yeah, 45.
He was former World Series of Fighting champion at 45. Lost his title, I believe, to Team Alpha Male wrestling coach Lance Palmer. I mean, you know, when you're fighting guys outside of the UFC who are a Team Alpha Male wrestling coaches, you're already fighting legitimate talent. So you could see what's like, you know what, I just need to get to the big show to get the big pay dollars because I'm fighting tough guys anyways.
That's it.
And is this the right assignment? I mean, can you look good taking a short notice fight against a guy as seasoned, as crafty, as intelligent as Evan Dunham?
Yes, but it's very hard. And Evan Dunham can beat any guy. And I mean any guy, top 10 guy. People are like, oh, he couldn't beat Alvarez or he couldn't beat...
Oh, I've seen him lose to all these
exactly.
guys before.
He can beat any of those guys on any night. And any of them will recognize it. He's incredibly talented everywhere. He went through a period of being able to dominate people positionally and stuff. Yeah. Then he went through this fight of the night period where he started making a lot of money. And it's, shit, if I can make another 50 every single night, you know, you get fight of the night three of your four fights. You're like, I just made an extra 150. I'll just fight that way. And I think now he's kind of come out the back door of that. And he's a dangerous guy. But Rick Glenn, man, some of these guys that end up with six wins and four losses, people who don't really look at their skills and look at how they fight and look at what they can do, go, oh, well, he's just some guy. But say, for example, Lyndon Whitlock. We called that one. Rick Glenn started smashing his arms with that left kick, just smashing. Eventually, the arms
going
just gonna
down.
Sag. Like it's you're having a physiologically, your brain is saying, put this here, and your
working.
Body's doing this.
Yeah.
And he got kicked in the head. You know, and this, if you know how good Lyndon is, he's black belt level on the ground, his striking's really good. You talk to Evan Boris from the Black Zillions or any number of these guys, they'll tell you how good these fighters are. The top 200, some of them are so incredibly good in any division. You know, guy number 135, this is a good.
That doesn't sound like an impressive number for people, but
it's a high level fighter.
Is it just because when you're looking at it, when you're looking, you mentioned the top 200. When you're looking at that list of guys, it's because they're all so close.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I would imagine there's big gaps because I think we've talked about this before. Because when you look at number one and I'll use the light heavyweight division, everybody recognizes that Daniel Cormier and Anthony Rumble Johnson, which are the number two and number three guys. The number one guy is John Jones.
Yeah.
But because of his issues, he's not the guy. But when you look at number two and number three being Cormier and Johnson.
And you look at Ilya Latifi.
Very good. So it's the number is so close when you're looking at these guys. Chase has given us the sign. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking more about the sensational fight card that people aren't really talking about that's going down in Texas on Saturday night. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you, chatting about everything that is going down in Hidalgo, Texas for UFC Fight Night. Michael Johnson taking on Dustin Poirier. And Robin, when you think about the lightweight picture, and I really can't think of a time that I've covered mixed martial arts or I've watched mixed martial arts. I guess it wasn't even mixed martial arts back in the day. That a division was as competitive and as dangerous as 155 pounds right now. Just you have so many different personalities, and I'm meaning fighting personalities, not just the way that they talk on the mic, the way they express themselves inside of the cage. And I could see, just like I thought with the welterweight division when Robbie Lawler became the champion, I thought the title was going to change hands a bunch of times. Do you believe that is the case right now? I know Eddie's your guy. Eddie's my guy, too.
Eddie's my guy.
But there is a reality, and the reality is there's just killers everywhere at 155 pounds.
Yeah, it's
Michael
true.
Chandler beat Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah. Michael Chandler's
he's
my guy, too.
Of course, he's everybody's guy because of the way he fights.
Yeah.
But so is Tony Ferguson, and so is Evan Dunham, and so is, you know,
people
just
people would say, oh, Evan Dunham, he lost a bunch of fights. That's what's crazy
that's
about it. It's like only the guys that you're seeing win right now are the ones in the front of some people's minds. And, you know, Khabib has never, ever lost to anyone.
Yeah. So he's the man.
You know, nobody has ever beat him. So I think of the people for Khabib, Tony is a pretty spectacular fighter. And, you know, again, there's a lot of different variables. Every fight is its own weird thing, which is why we want to celebrate them. But Khabib's last fight, he was fighting a guy nobody ever heard of. But we know how good that Groovy Lando is. We called some of his fights from Japan. And Tony engaged him in that kind of fight. He demanded of himself to have a, you know, enormous performance. So that was really cool. They're all different. But Khabib, I think the guy to beat him is Eddie. You have to be able to out-wrestle Khabib as well as find other things to take him outside of just grappling with him. And I think Eddie's the guy to do that. I think RDA and Khabib, we already saw it once. Where's RDA at now? I think, it's crazy. It really is. And I think I'm really saying right now, I suspect we don't have a main event for 205. Why? Because they're right now trying to get Alvarez and Conor McGregor to fight in New York.
That's New York City.
That's what I'm saying they're doing.
And the reason why they would do that, Philadelphia, not really that far from New York.
Ireland, they'll fly over to see him fight for a belt.
Of course.
Yeah.
I want to get back to all the action happening in Hidalgo, Texas. We talked about Dustin Poirier and Michael Johnson, Derek Brunson, Uriah Hall, Evan Dunham, Rick Glenn. There's a couple of guys on the card. One of the guys, Sam Cecilia, and if you're watching in Canada, we will air Sam Cecilia's fight live here on FN against Gabriel Benitez. And when I think about Sam Cecilia, because many people say, well, the rankings, where are you seeing the rankings? Isn't it important just the performances that these guys have? When I think about Sam Cecilia, I think about action fighter. That when I pay my 25, 50, 80, 200 bucks for a ticket and I tune in, or if I'm watching live on television, win or lose, the guy delivers.
Mm-hmm. Lineker is a couple weeks in the future. His feet are like very attached to the ground to deliver power, right? And that's his thing. And that's who Sam Cecilia really was.
Yeah.
And still is, but they've also really, like, I've been up until Du Ho Choi cracked him, and I don't think people quite realize just
how special
Du Ho Choi is. And it's not just because we had him on our top prospects list 4 or 5 years ago.
Clearly,
that's
one of
why
the reasons.
He was on the list because we knew he was spectacular. We got to call his fights in Japan. But he's spectacular, and he timed him on a level change where when you change your level, even if you're already heavy on the ground, you become slightly heavier. You're moving, the center of gravity is moving towards the ground. That's only a split second, but that's all he needs. And Du Ho Choi is very, very special. Take that fight out of there, and what you see from Sam Cecilia is big improvements from fight to fight to fight of the whole picture without ever giving up that ability to deliver with power. Anthony Johnson's the extreme big example of it, and Lineker is the small example of it, staying as mobile as you can make a guy, still anchored to the ground, fully in balance to deliver power. And Sam Cecilia is one of these guys at 145.
Do you think that they're fighters now, because you look at a guy like Donald Cowboy Cerrone, a guy that fought like Sam Cecilia in the sense that win or die, I'm putting on a hell of a show. Mm-hmm. Win or lose, I'm putting on a hell of a show. But you can't lose that many, especially now when you and I were talking about it off camera, about the amount of money that is being thrown around by the UFC, especially when Bellator is offering $500,000. They're trying to take some of the talent that new owners are now taking over the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Everybody sees Dana White made almost $1 billion. Everybody wants theirs. Now, for a guy, I'm just going to say this as an example. Let's just say Sam Cecilia realizes, you know what? I don't know if I'm ever going to get to be top 10, top 15 guy. I don't know if I'm ever going to fight for a championship. But if I continue to fight like this, be an action fighter, I'm going to make Donald Cerrone money. Is that true?
Joe Lozon's made some pretty good money.
But he's a back-in-the-day guy.
Yeah,
remember, he came in, had that win over Jens Pulver, and then went on to the Ultimate Fighter Season 5.
Yeah, right. But, you know, he is the example. Sam Stout, you know, one of the Canadian pioneers. Yeah. He made six or seven fight of the nights. And those two guys were just the first. Dunham, who is a, almost went from a skill guy to an action guy.
He says he's not doing that anymore. He's got to focus on, on getting the victories.
And man, we talked about Dunham earlier in the show. Dunham versus Rick Glenn is the, one of the fights I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Uriah was the guy who told us years back, he's like, you got to either be, you know, a winner or an action guy or a guy with a personality that makes fans. Ideally, we need to be all three. So you're trying to be all three. You're trying to be a good wrestler and a good boxer and a good kickboxer, old school thinking. You're trying to be interesting with lots of Twitter followers and an action fighter and a skill fighter. If you can only be one of those, skill fighter, keep your career. Action fighter might keep your career because you always show up and fight. Personality guy, CM Punk got his ass kicked. Yeah. That's not enough. We can't build fighters around that, and we shouldn't. So action fighter can give you a career, but the action – Evan Dunham's a beautiful example. Skill guy, made some extra money and went, oh, man, this is hard on my body, and you're going to lose some of those. So he went back towards being a skill and execution guy.
When you look to the card, the first fight of the night, Chaz Skelly, Maximo Blanco. Skelly, no spring chicken anymore. Was considered a top prospect. Yeah. What does he need to do to get past that prospect and now get himself be a contender in that division?
He knows what he needs to do against Maximo Blanco, and that is be as smart as possible in the first couple of minutes. And once we get a hold of him, we're going to move to his back. We're going to lace that one leg. We're going to stay up really high. We're going to be an annoying backpack on him. We're going to rough him up, beat him up, grind him up, and get a finish. And as long as he doesn't find himself caught early, which he's smart and veteran enough to not, he's a nice lock on that card.
Chris Wade on the card, Juan Carnero taking on Kenny Robertson. But I want to go back to the co-main event, Derek Brunson, Uriah Hall.
Uriah was interesting to talk to.
He was
smart and very evolving martial artist.
And one of the reasons what I found interesting is he's there. You forget that there are so many distractions.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many distractions, whether it is Twitter, because a lot of people forget that these guys are human beings.
I know.
I was checking one video, and there's a bunch of insults laid out to Uriah Hall, and that's like, well, these guys consume them, and some people may be immune to them, some people are not immune to them.
You've got to become immune to them.
Now, is that easy for people?
No.
And what do you do when it's like, you know what?
Lots of things are hard.
Yeah.
Everything's hard. And you can't, I mean, it's for me, it was easier when people went at me hard because then it was just like, it's just noise. Then you become immune to it. You're like, who gives a shit, you know? Like, where it's – and he got it hard. But instead of just going, this is meaningless. This – you know, you're going through your life. You're training. You're doing the things that you love. You're with your girl. You're at your job. Somebody typed something. That doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean anything.
But I think a lot of these athletes feel that it does. Well, is it going to affect my livelihood? What happens if I lose? Like, you were talking about what to one of the UFC broadcasters who said, you know what? This could be over tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but
and that's got to be stressful
for
everybody.
Stressful.
Now you're going into an environment, an already stressful environment, on top of all the stresses that are on top of that.
It's true, and everybody deals with multiple layers of stress, and you got to find your way through it. You know, Uriah was very interesting to talk to. It's disgusting. It's like, well, sometimes I think it's disgusting too, but then there are also times where you're like, well, what does it matter? You know, like, let's just focus on what we got to do. Growth, getting better, get better at your things. You know, we'll all be distracted. What you can't do is fixate on it. And it's been something, although we did follow up question him with it when he talked to the fans and the media. He's got a hatred on for that.
Mm-hmm.
That hatred is not helping him any. It's not hurting him right now. He's able to stay focused. But it's if you're walking around talking about the positivity of your coach over here and the negativity of that, just that same thing he was saying, let it go. Just let it go. Hey, man, don't look at your shoelaces. I know my shoelaces are fine. You got to let that go. It doesn't matter what some people write in 40 characters on a thing or on a website. It doesn't matter. You go through your life and you get better at what you do and you learn.
A very important fight at 185 pounds. Derek Brunson taking on Uriah Hall. We're going to take another timeout. When we come back, more discussion about this fight night card in Texas. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. The action keeps rolling. Next weekend, Brazil will play host to UFC Fight Night, the main event. Christiane Cyborg Justino, 16-1, taking on Lena Landsberg. Also, the former 135-pound champion, Henan Brow, taking on Philip Novar. Justin Scoggins taking on Pedro Munhoz. Roy Nelson, Bigfoot Silva. Francisco Trinaldo versus Paul Felder. Man, oh man, lots of great cards. Mm-hmm. Gilbert Burns in there. Ronnie Yaya, Dustin Ortiz.
I believe it's Hani Yaya.
It is Hani. Actually, my buddy Ricardo, he said, we all believe it's Hani. He's like, they're at some sort of jiu-jitsu competition. He's like, no, call me Ronnie.
Oh, well, see, they're not all the same. I'm just glad that Christiane Cyborg is not fighting Michael Landsberg. Michael Landsberg is an analyst on TSN television here up in Canada. Google Michael Landsberg, Chael Sonnen.
Or CM Punk.
Or CM Punk. Yeah, Michael Landsberg, CM Punk. Now, that's a fight he can win.
No, it's not.
No. But Mike is a great broadcaster. And when I saw Cyborg versus Landsberg, I was like, don't do that. He's a good dude.
Chris Cyborg, did you believe that, you know, when there was all that talk about her fighting Ronda Rousey, her not willing to get down to 135 pounds, did you believe that if she never got down to 135 pounds that she would ever fight in the UFC?
No, I didn't. And it's good for her that she did. I've always tried to analyze the science of weight loss, because people are like, well, you can't cut that much weight. No, but you can lose weight. Anyways, that aside, I was always finished that. So we'd have a discussion about that, and I'd finish it with, but that woman should do what she wants. And all the power to her. If you stood by what you wanted and still end up getting fights and getting to fight in the UFC, I admire that a great deal. I still think I'm not sure I do. I was about to say I still think more money is there for her at 35, but I think with Ronda gone, I don't even know if there is. I think she did the right thing. I think stayed with her thing. She's able to keep the size that she likes and performs well at. She doesn't have to go lose weight.
Yeah.
So good for her.
I think the reason why I think it's a great move is because it's irrelevant for, yes, maybe the Ronda Rousey fight might be the biggest fight
that
you can possibly.
That's millions.
So there you go.
Yeah.
But I think that Chris Cyborg, just on her own, with the amount of stoppage wins, not even just stoppage wins, how violent her stoppage wins are, that for the most part, she uses her hands and her feet to get the job done. If you go back and look at this fight with her, the second fight between her and Marluse Kunin, she woman-handled her.
Yeah,
she just brutalized her. And the more the mainstream, because right now she's a fight star. Mm-hmm. If you're in the fight game, if this is your sport, you know who she is.
Brazil, she's a popular celebrity.
Right, that's her native country, so you can understand that.
Yeah.
But for the mainstream masses, you put this girl on Fox and you show her doing what she's done countless times, a number of times, she's going to be just as big of a star, especially because she speaks English.
Well, I just think, and that's true, and she can make hundreds of thousands of dollars. But if she got to fight Ronda Rousey, whatever weight loss was required and it was achievable, it's gone now. It doesn't matter. But that's millions. And millions is just like that's – none of us are going to have – chances to do a job for millions. She could have done that. But that's gone now anyways. I'm glad she did it her way.
Next week, we're going to take a closer look at UFC Fight Night 95 that goes down in Brazil. That's another show in the books. On behalf of my broadcast partner, Robin Black, or producer Chase Kaiser, we're going to thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.